The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. So much to get to on today's program. We've got quite a mix on today's show as well. Coming up later on in the program, we'll be looking back at the Isaiah musical from 2014, Ryan Malone's musical. Right at the end of that year, it's hard to believe it's been now 3 years or so since that stage production there at Armstrong Auditorium. We'll have some clips from Ryan Malone himself talking about what led up to the creation of that musical and tying it together with the archaeological discoveries of the Hezekiah Bulla and the Isaiah Bulla. Both of those bulla have turned up since that production from back in December 2014. So we'll be talking to Ryan Malone later. Also later in the program, we'll be talking to Brad McDonald, speaking of the Isaiah Bulla and the area in and around Jerusalem. Brad McDonald just returned from Jerusalem, along with our producer, Sam Livingston. And Brad McDonald will be giving us a little bit of an update on just some of the things that he's been working on and what he was doing in Jerusalem for those 4 or 5 days that he was down there. Well, it's a busy time here for us at Edstone. We're gearing up for our annual Robber's Cave getaway. We call it Robber's Cave here, even though in Edstone or here in the UK, we go from one campsite to the next with each year. This year, we're heading up to the Lake District up north, about 3-4 hours north of where we are here in the Midlands. And as I mentioned yesterday, there's quite a bit of snow coming in, evidently. It's just a little bit now, but we're waiting to see if the meteorologists are exaggerating or not. But we're going to try to get out a little bit early if we can, just to get in ahead of the inclement weather. So we're heading out tonight, and lots to do here with the remaining few hours that we have left in this day to gear up for our trip. This morning, by the way, just speaking of how hectic it's been, we did tape a television program that was basically the material from, I think, last Wednesday or Thursday, following the Munich conference and just the inability of experts to solve the problems of this world. We've got an article going up at the website as well on some of that same material. So you can look for that on the website in the coming days. And in the case of the video, I guess that would be at the end of next week. Yesterday, we had a radio program. It takes courage to lead. You can get to all of these programs, by the way, at the trumpet.com website and also at kpcg.fm. I thought I'd just give you a couple of emails here at the start. In response to yesterday's show, if you didn't hear that, again, go to the website and listen to that podcast at your leisure. This one here says, do we now see the results of the promise program in the Florida school? The killer did make a promise of his own, and he kept that promise in the end. Only in this upside-down justice system, it says, can it now be said that success is failure to arrest. Failure to arrest, and failure to arrest the behavior comprising minor misdemeanor fosters the growth of that behavior into gross misdemeanors, and it lets the crime grow up in the school and even to the proportion of mass murder. Says finally, it seems now, even after the mass slaughter in the Florida school, that the public officials who promoted such fatal weaknesses in their policies are more concerned about saving face and salvaging their reputations and their programs, but none of them can revive the dead children. some good comments there following the material that we covered on yesterday's radio show. Another one here says, thanks for the powerful show. I couldn't help but think about your father. We talked about courage. Again, we talked about courage throughout that show. I couldn't help but think about your father, Mr. Gerald Fleury, and the stand that he took against the great evil power taking over God's church. He stood alone as well with Mr. Amos and defended God's truth. I wrote down a quote from Darkest Hour that really ties the two watchmen in Ezekiel 33 together in a powerful way, I think. What is quoted here resembles what your father said to Mr. DeKotch Jr. And she quotes Churchill here. This is the first sip of a very, well, actually, this is the direct quote from my father. You can find it in Malachi's Message and Raising the Ruins. But my father, on that night that he was fired back in 1989, he says, this is the first sip of a very bitter cup that you're going to have to drink. And then this listener from Canada dug up this speech. I guess part of it's quoted in Darkest Hour. It's from October of 1938, 3 days after Neville Chamberlain returned to Germany, or rather from Germany, with the Munich Agreement. It says, and that the terrible words have for the time being been pronounced against Western democracies. You are weighed in the balance and found wanting. This is quoting Churchill. And do not suppose that this is the end. This is only the beginning of the reckoning. This is only the first sip, the first foretaste of a bitter cup, which will be proffered to us year by year, unless by a supreme recovery of moral health and martial vigor, we rise again and take our stand for freedom, as in the olden times. That's from The Darkest Hour. And then this listener says here, the spiritual parallels leave goosebumps. Two watchmen giving a similar warning, one to physical Israel and one to spiritual Israel, in the same chapter of the Bible. Coincidence? Not when God is behind it. Awesome and inspiring program. Just one news item here before I have my discussion with Brad McDonald. It's a follow-up, basically, on the Jeroboam prophecy. Many of you are well aware of our chapter there at the start of the Great Again booklet, Who is Modern-Day Jeroboam? Last week on this program, I referred to this piece by Eric Erickson from the Weekly Standard, where he talked about this this relationship between President Trump and evangelical leaders. He titled his piece, The Apotheosis of Donald J. Trump. And if you look up that word in the dictionary, it means apotheosis, I mean. It means elevation of a person to a rank of God, or right up to the rank of God. So this is coming from someone who doesn't like the president very much. And he doesn't like this alliance between the president and the evangelicals. And if you remember in that Weekly Standard piece, he says that those that would come forward and criticize this alliance, they're basically like Amos before Amaziah. He referenced Amos chapter 7 of all things. And then Amos, or rather Amaziah, telling the prophet of God, go, you know, O seer, go flee away into the land of Judah and eat bread and prophesy there. And so this was a column in response to this article, or rather this book that came out about the faith of Donald Trump. This is by, I think it's by two authors, in fact. But in any event, one of the authors, David Brody, he wrote a piece. This was brought to my attention by one of our listeners down in Georgia. But he wrote a piece, David Brody did. This is very different in its tone. It's very supportive of President Trump and his relationship with the evangelicals. He wrote a piece for the New York Times just the other day, February 24th, and says here at the start, of all the questions surrounding the current president, perhaps the most perplexing is this: how could evangelicals get behind a man like Mr. Trump, especially well-known conservative leaders who both treasure and champion morality? And then he talks about some of the moral failings of Donald Trump before he ran for president. It says most of the world and even most reporters know only the public side of President Trump. In private, evangelical leaders have come to recognize a more compassionate side. And then Mr. Brody gives some examples here, like when he was down touring some of the damage from the Louisiana floods. He was there with Billy Graham's son, Franklin Graham, and another evangelical, Tony Perkins, and he gave a generous contribution to the recovery effort. And Brody says later in his piece, another story involves Mr. Trump and the televangelist James Robinson praying together inside an SUV on the airport tarmac in Panama City, Florida, during a campaign stop. When Mr. Trump exited the car, he gave Mr. Robinson, or Robison, a hug, pulled him up against his chest firmly and said, "Man, I sure love you." A small gesture, Brody writes, perhaps, but heartfelt, real, and so unlike the caricature of the president most of us see. And practically every evangelical leader I interviewed has a similar story. He says critics say that the Trump evangelical relationship is transactional. In other words, they're both getting out of the relationship what they want to get out of it. It benefits both movements, President Trump's presidency and, of course, the evangelicals. That's what the critics say. But here is David Brody saying, look, no, this is real. This is sincere. And by the way, I mean, even in the Christian movement, aren't we supposed to be forgiving? He says the Bible is replete with examples of flawed individuals being used to accomplish God's will. Evangelicals I interviewed said they believed that Mr. Trump was in the White House for a reason. They're believers. They believe God has worked this out. They believe that God is orchestrating all of this. He goes on and says, and here again, he's, I think, just paraphrasing some of the things he wrote in his book, The Faith of Donald Trump, which I haven't read, but just in what I've read about it, well, he's giving a good synopsis here, I think, in this New York Times piece. My reporting, he says, suggests Donald Trump is on a spiritual voyage that has accelerated in recent years thanks to evangelicals who have employed the biblical mandate of sharing and showing God's love to him rather than shunning him. So this, he says, this reveals just how caring, how loving, how forgiving the traditional Christian movement or traditional Christianity has been to welcome President Trump with open arms. He says this president's effect on our cultural norms has been shocking. His critics would call it appalling. Evangelicals say it's immensely satisfying. They've seen a culture deteriorate quickly in the past decade, and they're looking for a bold culture warrior to fight for them. He says here, David Brody writes, showing that God does indeed have a sense of humor, he gave them Mr. Trump. Yet, in God's perfection, it's a match made in heaven. Mr. Trump and evangelicals share a disdain for political correctness, a world seen through absolutes, and a desire to see an America that embraces Judeo-Christian values, again, rather than rejecting him. And it just says later on in the piece that Donald Trump, of all people, I mean, it talks about some of the things the evangelicals love. Again, he's not politically correct. He's made some good appointments to the judicial courts. He has pro-life policies. He's decided to move the embassy to Jerusalem. He's a champion of religious liberty issues. David Brody says he easily wins the unofficial label of the most evangelical-friendly United States president ever. That's pretty amazing. And it comes right out of the seventh chapter of the prophet Amos's book. Evangelicals have found their man. They have found their man. They are standing beside their president. That's just a bit from David Brody's opinion piece at the New York Times. In Donald Trump, evangelicals have found their president. And I would just encourage you to go back to Great Again, our booklet, and particularly look at that first chapter, who is the modern day Jeroboam. Well, maybe we can break away for a short promo, and then when we come back, we will be sitting down and chatting with Brad McDonald. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine.
The Trumpet Daily.
And we are back with one of my colleagues here in the booth, Brad McDonald, who just returned from Jerusalem, I believe, on Monday night. And I don't think we planned this when you prepared for that trip, but as it happens, you were there when Dr. Mazar released the news, or when the article that she wrote about the Isaiah Bulla appeared in the Biblical Archaeology Review. And of course, we had all of our articles and our videos to go along with it last Thursday. But you were there in Jerusalem. You were there with the diggers. You were there with Dr. Mazar. Maybe you could start by telling us what it was like to be in Jerusalem when the news broke of the new Isaiah Bulla.
Right. Well, it was really pretty exciting. It wasn't something that we planned. It just kind of all fell into place that way. It was an early start to the day. It released at, I think it was 7 o'clock Israel time. So we were up early, just wanting to make sure that the article was ready, the video was ready. Everything went well. There are a couple little glitches. Richard Palmer was awake back here in England at 5 o'clock. There was a second there where he sent me an email that said, I think I broke the website. Something happened for a minute or two where we didn't have a live website right after the release of the trumpet.
Oh, wow. I was not aware of this.
It was just for a minute or two. But yeah, his email said, I think I broke the trumpet. I may need to call Patrick. But then he got it all figured out. So that was exciting. I made it out to the dig a couple hours after the release of the article. Dr. Mazar was just, you know, she's always happy, but she was just extra happy that day. I think it'd been 9 years since this bulla had come out of the earth. So it'd been a long time coming, and it had been 4 years since she had studied it initially. So this was a big day for her. I was there for maybe two and a half hours, and her phone was just binging. She has this Vienna choir boy ringtone to her phone. It's like, beep, 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 ring me, something like that. But it was just, we couldn't talk for more than 10 minutes before her phone would ring with journalists and Hebrew University, and everyone was just super excited. So yeah, it was a great day.
Yeah. Speaking of her phone, we urged her for years to get a new phone because she had one of the old styles where the flip phone. That's what it was. So right. Now she's got a little bit of a nicer phone.
It's a smartphone now, yeah. So she's connected to the rest of the world. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's great. I mean, to be there, Sam, I mentioned, I think it was on Monday's program, he came back with the Friday newspaper, which had the big picture of the Isaiah Bulla right there on the front page above the fold.
Yep.
And I brought out to the listeners on Friday, or Monday, I guess it was, that this was actually given more publicity than the Hezekiah Bulla.
Right. Oh, yeah, it definitely feels like that. Dr. Mazar was just extra excited about that front page placement on the Jerusalem Post.
Yeah.
Apparently that had never happened before with any of her other artifacts. So we took an extra copy in with us on Sunday of the J-Post, and she took 5 minutes to go read the article, and she was just really, really pleased. But yeah, Fox News, all of the biggest sites in the world, National Geographic, it really garnered a lot of attention, more attention than the Hezekiah Bulla.
Yeah.
I think that's mainly because Isaiah is probably the most famous prophet.
Yeah, which, you know, and we discussed this earlier this morning, but still, given how many how many people in Israel are just pretty secular. You think they would be more excited about the king. And plus the king, I mean, it was obvious. That's obviously King Hezekiah's seal. This one, at least there's some question right. that maybe it might not be that. But and then, of course, there's a chunk missing, so it's not like a full piece,
right.
even though the chunk is just the image. So it's not like it's that significant of a piece that's missing. But still, that surprised me. I mean, I welcome it. I'm glad.
Right.
It's God's prophet, but still.
Yeah, it kind of surprised quite a few people. I don't think it surprised Dr. Mazar. I guess I was a little surprised. It surprised Hebrew University. I was with Dr. Mazar on Thursday, and the university called her, and they were just kind of asking her, what are we going to do? Can you come do a press conference? Because Dr. Mazar didn't do a press conference for this bulla. It was the BAR article and our article. And Hebrew University, they were kind of caught off guard too. So they were kind of scrambling because they were just being inundated with calls to speak with Dr. Mazar and for more information.
Yeah.
So, it was a bit of a mad day, but a great day.
Yeah. Yeah, that just brings to mind just some of the other things we've helped her with over the years. We've taken a back seat and we've been happy to do that. But with some of the other ones, there has been the big press conference.
Right.
It was in Edmond. That was where I was working, you know, when we dealt with like the medallion. I was here for Hezekiah, of course. But yeah, it was always the press conference and then the Hebrew University and then the interviews. And then, you know, the trumpet would come around and, okay, we could go ahead and hit our
right.
article. And in this case, though, I mean, it was just Biblical Archaeology Review,
yep.
which is not like a mainstream breaking news publication. It was just in their monthly magazine,
right.
no press conference. And so, as you say, as soon as it hits at 7 o'clock in the morning Israel time or 5 a.m. here,
yep.
we were ready with an article that you had produced, which is a brilliant piece, by the way, with all the graphics too, and then just the video that Sam had put together, and then you guys put together a video later that day, like an on the spot interview
yeah.
with Dr. Mazar. That was yeah. awesome.
Yeah, I guess so. It happened in kind of a fit of absent-mindedness. We were just kind of walking along the path, and we had the camera out and the microphone, and I just said to Sam, like, should we just do a little video? And he's like, yeah, why not? So we just set it up in 2 or 3 minutes, and then I didn't even know what questions to ask her. I really hadn't given it any thought until that moment. So we just gave it a crack, and Dr. Mazar came off great. I went back and watched it afterwards, and I can see some things I'd do differently. but I think it was pretty popular on YouTube and whatnot, just because it was kind of that day. It was kind of a little breaking soundbite from Dr. Mazar. So yeah, that was neat.
So all of that, as exciting as it was, that was just kind of an aside to why you were there in the first place. Maybe you could now tell our listeners what was the main purpose of your 5-day stay.
Sure. In October last year, your dad, Mr. Gerald Flurry, the managing editor of the trumpet.com, he just talked with us about wanting to do more to bring some publicity to Dr. Mazar, but also to tell the story of Alat Mazar, Benjamin Mazar, her grandfather, and the archaeology that the Benjamin Mazar and his granddaughter have been uncovering these past 60, 70, 80 years. Alat Mazar, as far as we're concerned, has, you know, she's doing the most important archaeological work on earth. And Mr. Flurry just felt like, you know, more people need to know about this, and they need to know about who Alat Mazar is, who Benjamin Mazar is, their role in Jerusalem, and the way they think, why they approach archaeology so differently. The Bible's really, they kind of consider the Bible a history book and an important resource mm-hmm. when they're conducting their archaeology. And Mr. Flurry just, you know, really believes that story needs to be told. So that's what this book is about. So I went down there to talk to the Mazar family. So I had two interviews with Alat Mazar, Dr. Alat Mazar. I had an interview with Tali Mazar, mm-hmm. Dr. Mazar's sister. I had an interview with Amahai Mazar, her cousin, Benjamin Mazar's nephew, who's a very famous archaeologist. He's won the Israel Prize for his archaeology. And then we finally had our interview with Mr. Joseph Avaram.
Right. We've been trying to do that for months. And
two
months.
And a half years. We've years. Had it lined up. Sam has been on his way to the airport to go film the interview and then had to turn around because the interview was canceled. So yeah.
Just so our listeners know, he actually knew Mr. Yep. Armstrong. He's very close to Mr. Armstrong. And at present is, what, 103?
Yeah, he turns 102 next month.
He's March. Almost 102 years old. So he's not just giving lots and lots of interviews at this stage in his life. But, you finally got to talk to him and then all the Mazar clan, it sounds
like. It was awesome. Just such a special, special family. In all of these interviews, we talked about three subjects in general. Benjamin Mazar, Alat Mazar, and Mr. Armstrong, particularly with Joseph Avaram, Tali, and Dr. Mazar. We talked about Mr. Armstrong and his work in Jerusalem and Israel. I really have grown to appreciate Benjamin Mazar even more. It was just really fantastic to ask, you know, some kind of intimate questions about who is Benjamin Mazar and why did he think the way he thought and what was his personality and character like. So we have about 8 hours of interview material that we're having it transcribed right now. And we're just got to figure out what we do with all of this.
Right. That's awesome. Yeah. Tali Mazar is, Dr. Mazar's sister. She's assisted Dr. Mazar, Alat Mazar, for a number of years. She goes back to the ambassador's dig in the 1960s and 70s. She actually went to Brickettwood College for a year. And then more recently, when we brought the Jeremiah exhibit over to Edmund, she was the sort of the caretaker that traveled with all of the pithoi and the bulle and everything else that we brought to Edmund. So did you meet her at her where she lives, or did she come to Jerusalem?
She came down to Jerusalem. We did it at the dig site.
Okay.
Yep.
And what about with the other Mazar?
I went to his home, Amahai Mazar. Yeah. That's in Jerusalem too. And then Joseph Avaram we did at the Israel Exploration Society.
Okay. And so he talked primarily about Mr. Armstrong and then...
He talked about Mr. Armstrong and Benjamin Mazar. He was very, very close to Benjamin Mazar.
Right.
He was one of Benjamin Mazar's closest colleagues. And Joseph Avaram has been around and involved in Jerusalem archaeology since the 1940s.
Yeah.
So he was a goldmine for information on Benjamin Mazar and Mr. Armstrong.
Mm-hmm. And then what about Tali? Did she talk mostly about Alat Mazar? Or?
And Benjamin Mazar.
Yeah.
We talked with her quite a bit about Benjamin Mazar and then, her sister. And then I also asked her about her time, at Brickettwood with the students and whatnot as well.
So. Yeah. Yeah, Dr. Mazar has referred to it a few times over the years. She very nicely points out how strict it was.
Yeah, that came up again.
Yeah.
These long skirts, I just couldn't understand.
In any event, they had some, they have a lot of wonderful memories as well. And they both talk about just how many friends that Tali made. I mean, we've actually been in Tali's home over on the coast, which that was several years ago. It is just a wonderful family. Maybe you could finish off with just commenting a little further. You kind of touched on it, but you mentioned how that, Benjamin Mazar was more than just an archaeologist. He really was instrumental in the establishment of the Israeli state in some ways, and certainly had a hand in, when Jerusalem was unified after the Six-Day War. I mean, he was the one that went right to work there in the old city, right on the dividing line, basically, between East and West.
Yeah. Yeah, he was, I would say he's a founding father of the Jewish state, no doubt about it. He was good friends with David Ben-Gurion, Israel's first prime minister. His brother-in-law was the president of Israel. His name slips my mind right now. He created Hebrew University. In 1948, he became the president of Hebrew University. And at that time, everyone was talking about Hebrew University needs to wind down. The campus, there was no single campus. It was just scattered all over the city. The library was in one suburb, one building here, and he kind of consolidated it onto Mount Scopus, where it is today. He was involved in the establishment of Haifa University, Tel Aviv University, the Israel Antiquity Authority, the Israel Exploration Society, wow. Israel Museum, that's some amazing. Of the first hospitals. It's anything, any kind of academic institution, anything to do with Israel's history,
right.
Benjamin Mazar's fingertips are on it. And then every person that we interviewed talked about these seminars that would occur in Benjamin Mazar's home.
Right.
Every week he'd just have like an open house, and there'd be anywhere from 30 to 40 scholars, archaeologists, politicians. They would just come and they would just talk about the latest archaeological project, the latest right. project in Israel.
Right.
And it all happened in his living room. It's amazing.
Yeah, that is. Well, we're certainly going to look forward to some of the writing that you put together from all these interviews in the months and perhaps years ahead.
Right, right.
And lastly, maybe you could just finish with what was the least enjoyable part of traveling internationally with Sam?
Oh. Well,
kidding.
We bought a smooth account. I had 3 or 4 stories.
You do. We'll have to bring you back then. All right. Well, we will look forward to more from Brad McDonald down the road. When we come back, we're going to conclude today's program with, just carrying on with this theme, this Hezekiah-Isaiah axis and the Isaiah musical that we put together just a few years ago. So stay with us.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. At one time, the kings of ancient Israel and Judah, during the period of the divided monarchy, were not known, apart from the biblical record. Critics did not believe they existed. But the relatively new science of archaeology, the digging up and study of the material remains of man's past, has confirmed without question the historical accuracy of the Bible. Solid, documented evidence, apart from the Bible, confirms events and personalities that were at one time known to us only from Scripture. The Hezekiah Bulla is the latest find among literally hundreds of archaeological discoveries that corroborates Bible history. To learn more about this God-inspired text, request The Proof of the Bible and the Herbert W. Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. There is no cost or obligation, and your information remains secure. All of our literature is offered free of charge, without cost or obligation to you. In addition to the free booklet, we would like for you to enroll in the Herbert W. Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. This 3-year college course includes 36 lessons and examines not just the fundamental questions of religion, but the fundamental questions of life. Request The Proof of the Bible and the Herbert W. Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. There is no cost or obligation, and your information remains secure. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Okay, well, in light of all the news this past week of the new Isaiah Bulla and following the discussion we had earlier on the program with Brad McDonald, I thought it would be a good time to just look back at the Isaiah musical. You talk about this wonderful connection between the prophet Isaiah, and of course King Hezekiah. That was brought out in the December 2014 musical put on by Herbert W. Armstrong College, and of course Ryan Malone was the creator of the musical, The Book of Isaiah, this story that this musical that chronicled the story of the prophet Isaiah. And all throughout that production, you had this this really amazing connection between King Hezekiah and the prophet Isaiah. And the discovery of the Isaiah Bulla, which, as we discussed with you last week, appears to have belonged to the prophet. I mean, here too, that was, I mean, archaeologically, that was found right at the same layer, right in the same space even, as that Hezekiah Bola, the Hezekiah Bola discovered back in 2009. And I guess the Isaiah Bola would have been around the same time, although it just came to light a little bit later on in the story. So in any event, I mean, you look at this close working relationship that Isaiah the prophet had with King Hezekiah. I mean, here is Isaiah, God's prophet, this high-ranking official, and working right together with one of the most prominent kings in Judah's history. We recently discussed the musical and what led up to it, its production, with the creator, the producer of that musical, Ryan Malone. Ryan is, I think many of you know, he also is a presenter on KPCG with his program, Music for Life, his weekly program. And as I say, we spoke to him recently about the Isaiah musical from 2014. And this first clip that we'll play from our discussion, we just asked him about some of the inspiration behind the musical and what led up to it. Here's clip one.
We had just finished doing the musical about the life of King David. And those ideas come from the top of the organization. It comes from Mr. Gerald Fleury himself. He wanted to do something about the book of Isaiah because of the poetry, the strong poetry in the book. Particularly, he was excited about setting Isaiah 40 to music, which has a very strong, you know, behold your God theme. And so that chapter, you know, that has a lot of great imagery and you know, wonderful poetry. But the question was, well, what would the plot be? Because this is a musical, and so people are going to be following characters and following that type of thing. So when you look into the book of Isaiah, you see the plot is, you know, even though he had four kings whose reigns he overlapped when he was doing his work, Isaiah says, the first part of Isaiah says that the one that he was really involved in was Hezekiah. And you look at Hezekiah's reign and you see sort of the major plot development or the major conflict slash resolution type thing is this situation where Sennacherib comes against, you know, the king of Judah. He's plowing through that entire area and he's about to take Jerusalem. He surrounds it, in fact. And so, you know, I went to Mr. Fleury and said, well, it looks like the plot would have to be revolving around this, but we can use Isaiah's poetry, you know, all of his word pictures and that type of thing to form the basis of this, to form the basis of this plot. So, I guess that would be where the inspiration came from. It was a commissioned, storyline, so to speak, even though, the specifics were, you know, set Isaiah 40 to music, but of course the plot that it revolved around was the main plot of Isaiah and Hezekiah and how they interacted. And then as you would notice as you go through listening to the musical, that the phrase, behold your God, is peppered throughout the lyrics of, you know, half the songs have that phrase somehow nestled in there some way. That's sort of a code that, like, this is really what this is about, is like seeing the power of God behind these events.
That's Ryan Malone, the creator of the Book of Isaiah, the musical from 2014. We were asking him there about the inspiration behind the production. And in this next segment from the interview, we obviously he was immersed into the study of the Book of Isaiah and the history in Kings and Chronicles having to do with Hezekiah. So we asked him about his research and what sorts of things really did fascinate him about this story. Here's clip two.
Well, what I found when going through Hezekiah's life, the accounts in, you know, Isaiah and Kings and Chronicles, and when going through his life, there were a lot of images that Isaiah used in his poetry that that obviously were written in the backdrop of that scenario. And so Isaiah has a lot to say about water, for instance. And Hezekiah is, of course, known for digging a tunnel, you know, through to divert the water so that he would basically not be just watering a foreign army as it sat outside the gates and, you know, just kept sustaining them with the water. And so in the song about how Hezekiah did that, we were able to hear about all of the word pictures that Isaiah uses about water in that song. And so you have the plot in particular being about Hezekiah, but the words being used to describe it being the word pictures from this, you know, poetic prophet.
And if you haven't seen the production, it is available on YouTube. I sent out a tweet, I think, last week that had a link to it. Perhaps following the show, we can also draw more attention to it on our websites. But in continuing on with our discussion, we asked then, and this was something we really did stress with the discovery of the Isaiah Bulla last week, we asked Ryan Malone about the working relationship between these two, as Brad McDonald has written, this this incredible king-prophet axis. And here's what Ryan Malone went on to say, clip three.
Oh, it's extremely close. It's really interesting, in fact, that in studying for the musical, that Isaiah was a person of quite a bit of importance. That struck me as I was studying it, that he was likely related to the royal line, that he was, as some people call him, the prince of prophets. He was literally a prince, as many people would suggest, and that was pretty obvious too. Working how he worked with Hezekiah, when Hezekiah sent his chief of staff and his treasurer to go see Isaiah. You know, they could have just as easily called for Isaiah to come to court, but they had to go to Isaiah and wait on him. So it shows he was somewhat of some prominence, which, you know, when the Bulla comes out and he has his own seal, well, then that obviously is very logical because he was a prominent individual. He had written a lot of history to that point. I mean, the Bible indicates he wrote a lot of royal history that wasn't canonized. So, you know, he was someone who was a prominent individual in Jerusalem at that time. And so for Hezekiah to be working with him, you know that relationship is close. Also because you know that Hezekiah is seeking, you know, the God of Jerusalem. He's seeking the true God and setting up worship to be revolving around the altar and the temple and, you know, one centralized place. And so because he's seeking Isaiah's God, you could say, that he's going to be working closely with Isaiah. So that really did strike me that they were on the same team, as you might call it, a king prophet team. And the only time you see them having a bit of being at odds, I guess you could say, is where Isaiah comes to Hezekiah and says, "You're going to die, you know, from this illness, and, you know, get your house in order." And from everything we could tell, that's because Hezekiah, when you do the math and the timeline and all that, Hezekiah didn't have an heir yet. And so Isaiah knew that the Davidic line had to continue, and he said, "You better get your house in order because we've got to move on." And Hezekiah, you know, he heard what the prophet said, and then he went immediately to God. You know, he basically went over Isaiah's head and prayed to God himself and said, "I, you know, remember everything I've done to this point, where I've really tried to clean up this country and all that." And God heard his prayer. He turned to Isaiah right around and said, "Go back in and tell him I'm going to add 15 years to your life. I'm going to give you a sign that it's going to happen. You can turn the sun backwards if you want, so I can prove that to you." So it really is. It's really amazing how these two, even when they were at odds, you could say, how God really worked with both of them in a really intimate way.
Lots of history there in that summary by Ryan Malone, the one who wrote the Isaiah musical back in 2014. It was elaborating there on this special working relationship that these two had, Hezekiah and Isaiah. He also mentioned the Bulla there, and how that really, it should come as no surprise that Isaiah the prophet, this prophet and prince who would be so prominent that he would have his own seal to have or to produce those bulla. In this next bit with Ryan Malone, we then asked about or talked a little bit about the discovery of this new bulla, and here's what Ryan had to say.
In one sense, it's incredibly exciting. And in the other sense, and this doesn't diminish the excitement, it's also, well, of course, you know, I mean, based on, you know, everything you study in the Bible about it, it's physical evidence, you know, in addition to what the Bible already says. And so we want to promote the Word of God, the Bible, the Holy Scripture in the musical. And so, of course, it will have already highlighted that relationship. And so I guess you could say these bulla are fantastic, and yet they come a little late to the party, because we all know from, you know, if you believe the Word of God, that this relationship existed and it was intensely strong.
That's Ryan Malone, the producer of the Isaiah musical. And we had one last exchange with him. Sennacherib obviously factors into this story and is a prominent figure in the Isaiah musical. And here's one last clip from Ryan Malone on that.
Well, I guess you could say, too, that even Sennacherib's part in it, you know, what they found about Sennacherib, I mean, archaeology's found a lot about him, too. And again, it just confirms, you know, what the biblical record says. It confirms what we put in the musical, you know, that Hezekiah said, you know, he talked about all these kings that he had killed and he had conquered. And yet Hezekiah, he says, I trapped him like a bird in a cage. And that's all he says, because, you know, he didn't actually win win that one. And so just thinking about even this third personality, Sennacherib, you know, more of the antagonist for sure, but also archaeology has found so much about him. And so I just think when you put all that together, archaeology is painting a dramatic picture of what the Bible already paints, and what we tried to express and paint through a stage production.
And that's for sure. I mean, it's quite vivid, this painting, whether it was that production on stage at Herbert W. Armstrong College back in 2014, or all of these archaeological discoveries. I mean, it's bringing the Bible to life. Who can deny it? There's, like he mentioned in that clip, I mean, look at all of the discoveries, even having to do with Sennacherib, right down the road from us here at Edstone in the British Museum. Pretty amazing. To finish today's program, we haven't played a song in quite some time, but this is undoubtedly one of the favorites. For those that have seen the Isaiah musical live, this was certainly a moving selection or song. I think about two-thirds of the way through the show. Just it's called Spread It Before the Lord. And as I say, anyone who saw the musical will instantly remember this scene. But for those who haven't, just to give you a little bit of background, Hezekiah's messengers, they come to Isaiah. They bring news to the prophet that Assyria's attack is imminent. Sennacherib is barreling down on Jerusalem. And so these messengers are coming to seek counsel from God's prophet. And I believe it's in 2 Kings or 1 or 2 Kings. I think it's in Isaiah 37 as well. In any event, Isaiah, the prophet, he tells these messengers, look, don't be afraid or dismayed. Don't be afraid of the Assyrians. Look to God as your strength, as your shield, as your protector. Just trust God and go and comfort the people of Jerusalem, telling them to be strong and to fear not. Behold your God. So when you get to this scene in the musical, you have, there's four singers or four personalities in this one scene. It actually is quite long. It goes on for something like 6 minutes. So we'll finish the show with this entire selection here. But at the start, you have the prophetess who comes on the scene to describe this scroll that Hezekiah received from the Assyrians, and then King Hezekiah goes and spreads that scroll before God. He does it on his knees, and he lays it out to God. Of course, in the scriptures, he's crying out to God in prayer, and Ryan Malone has put all of that, of course, to song here with the musical. But he tells God, the king does, he tells God of every taunt and every burden, And he laid every single word of this threat coming from Sennacherib. He laid it before God's feet. He made his request known to God. And in this particular scene, again, a very moving scene, you have Sennacherib in the background who's carrying on with these bold taunts, telling the king, telling the people of Judah, you better not trust God. You better not look to your God to deliver you. And so you have in this one scene, you have the prophetess. She's played by Paula Malone. You have King Hezekiah. Mark Jenkins played the role of Hezekiah. And then Ryan Malone, who created the musical, he is in the role of Isaiah. And, of course, Sennacherib is played by Joel Hilliker. So you'll hear all of these voices here and there throughout this this particular piece, and then I think they all come together for a dramatic conclusion at the end. So here is, from the Book of Isaiah musical, the December 2014 musical, here is Spread It Before the Lord.
The king received the scroll, describing threats so bold, designed to make the bravest man afraid. Parchment did record to heaven these words soared. He took it to the temple and he prayed. He spread it before the Lord. Every single word and every single burden, how he laid them bare. He spread it before the Lord. Every single want, every single taunt, he spread it before the Lord.
Not the God you serve can rescue or preserve this city which my hosts have now enclosed. Jerusalem is trapped and Zion's strength is sapped. Your dynasty and throne shall be deposed. All nations I laid waste, their gods I have disgraced. This faith your God and you will not avoid. The power of all lands is given to my hands. Their rulers have I utterly destroyed. Go spread it before your Lord. Like Telazar or Gozan or Rezeph, Eden, Haran, these realms whose gods could not withstand my sword. The kings of Hamath and Hena, Sepharvaim, Arphad, Eva, all perished, as will you and your Lord. All nations I laid waste, their gods I have disgraced. This fate your God and you will not avoid. The power of all lands is given to my hands. Their rulers have I utterly destroyed. Go spread it before your Lord. Lord God of Israel, mid cherubim you dwell, where mighty hosts are singing your great worth. There you have set your throne, and you, O God alone, created all in heaven and in earth. Eternal, bend your ear, that you, O Lord, may hear the blasphemy the enemy proclaims. And open now your eyes, behold how he defies the living God he brazenly defames. I spread it before you, Lord, every single word and every single burden, how I laid them bare. I spread it before you, Lord, every single want, every single taunt, I show you every care. Oh, hear my urgent prayer. I spread it before you, Lord. I spread it before you, Lord. If you show the wicked favor, he never will be just. He will not behold your glory if he lays us in the dust.
Let him behold you, God, and rightly be ashamed. Smite him with your zeal, consume him with your flame. We have waited for you, Lord, for justice we inquire, to see your fame remembered. This is our soul's desire. Other lords have ruled us, other masters than our God. But only you we mention, and only you we laud. We spread it before you, Lord. Every single phrase, every single praise, your works beyond compare, your honor we declare. We spread it before you, Lord. All nations, they laid waste.
All nations, I laid waste.
Their gods, they have disgraced.
Their gods, I have disgraced.
Their lifeless idols made of stones and trees.
Mere stones and trees.
Now save us from his hand.
The power of all
gods. The only God who can.
Is given to my hand.
Go, all nations, worship you upon the knees. I spread it before you.
Go, spread it before.
And every single word and every single burden. I lay the
hand.
I spread it before you.
We spread it before you, Lord.
The Trumpet Daily.